Hey everybody, this is Dixon from Dead Horse. Now, we love making podcasts, and like many people who love making podcasts, we don't really know how to do it that well all of the time. During the recording of my audio for this episode, Leprechaun in the Hood, I experienced a power outage and lost my entire track. So, we're going to be using the Zoom recording for a large portion of this. And also, we forgot to start recording the Zoom call until about 8 minutes in. So, for the first 8 minutes of the podcast, I am not going to be there, and you will hear everybody else's regular audio, and then Lubdon will cast one of his famous magic spells or wishes and bring me back in around the 8 minute mark. But that audio will be from a Zoom call, so it might be a little bit weird in terms of how it matches up, how it, you know, it does all of it, wave file. Sorry, I just suddenly need to shit so bad. Alright, I'm gonna wrap this up then. But yeah, thank you for bearing with us. We appreciate it, especially because we're really proud of this episode. We like it a lot. We have our first repeat guest in Irene Polk, who is just amazing. It's a good one. So thanks for sticking it out, and scream though you may, scream though you might.
What a picture. I'm like I'm walking on eggshells to jump into such a meal, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And we have like a leprechaun aficionado on the podcast this week.
I cannot believe how lucky we are. How did we find you? Oh, man. Irene's here.
Irene Polk is in the stable.
Hello.
What's going on?
He's not.
Irene Polk, actor, cringe content enthusiast, expert, sought after movie podcast guest, and luminary of the Leprechaun film series. Welcome the fuck back. You are our first returning guest, by the way.
Really?
Yes.
Wow, that's really cool. I feel special.
Now, my memory of, like, telling you about what season two of Dead Horse was going to be involved, like, bringing up that, like, we were going to do Leprechaun, and you, like, turned 180 degrees and were like, wait a second. You have, like, a relationship with this series, yes?
I do have a relationship with the series. I would like to think that Leprechaun was the opening scene to my bisexual awakening, in which... So, let's give some backstory here. So,
please.
When I was younger, I had an uncle who used to watch me, and he had a cabinet full of VHSs, like... full, probably hundreds of movies. And somehow, at the tender age of maybe 9, way too young to be watching these movies, by the way, Leprechaun caught my eye, and I had a really invested interest in watching them because it was the only way that I could see breasts.
Oh, for sure. That makes sense.
Because that's the leprechaun's second favorite way of murdering someone.
That's true.
Just introducing breasts into the equation.
Inventing. Yeah, there are tits in the series, and that's something that we all have to be grateful for.
Yes.
So I can totally understand that. So, Irene, what is your, like, and not just Leprechaun in the Hood, experience with Leprechaun? So have you seen all of them? And how do you feel about this franchise?
So I've seen all of them up until Back to the Hood.
Okay.
I don't have a very good memory of all of them. I think this is probably the only Leprechaun movie. Leprechaun in the Hood is the only movie I've seen more than once.
Because but, we made you.
Oh, listen. This is a joy, Becky. You could have... Listen, there was nothing that was going to keep me from watching this movie.
That's amazing. So just out the gate, you're a fan. You like Lep in the Hood.
I think Leprechaun in the Hood is not only the best Leprechaun movie out of the entire series, but a cult classic film that does not get enough recognition. This is one of the best movies ever made, in my opinion, hands down. I know I sound sarcastic, listeners, but there's no sarcasm here. That's just my
she's not.
Incredible.
There, no irony hats being worn here. Because we have a spreadsheet of all the movies we're doing and the guests that are, like, slotted for them. And I remember you coming into my room and seeing Leprechaun in the Hood. There was someone's name next to it. I remember you coming in, forcefully deleting the name, and then typing in your own name in all caps.
And the spot is yours.
Yeah, I can't bear to be disrespected in my own home. PJ, that was mine.
Never again. Never again.
Just a quick pause. Sorry, fam.
Love her.
Cool. That is incredible. I don't feel that way. I think when I'm watching this movie, there's a few things I'm impressed by, and a lot of it is the cast. I thought that the cast was really strong. And I think overall, like, my overarching feeling is, like, this is the first horror movie in the franchise. It feels like the grimmest, creepiest, one so far. And, I don't No, ironically, I don't know if the franchise is better for it, is kind of my feeling. Like, it feels very different than the rest of the franchise in a way that feels, like, grimy and not in the spirit of the Leprechaun that I have come to know. That's my feeling.
It's not your friend loved on. Irene, apparently the Leprechaun's name is Lubdon, even though that is never said.
Never
in
said.
The films.
Wow. Beautiful.
I, like, read that on Wikipedia before the first episode, and I just, like, I just stormed into that record treating it like it was like certain. Apparently that just happened in, like, a comic book a couple years ago. And that's the only way we'd know. But we're on, like, a first name basis with him.
Yeah. I feel like that's who he is.
Inside, yeah, for sure.
That guy's got real Lubdon vibes. It's like when you see someone named Keith and you're like, that's totally Keith, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, that motherfucker's a Lubdon. I really enjoyed this movie. There are a couple of elements that certainly do not age well, but by and large, I think, like you were saying, Becky, the cast in this one is uniformly very, very strong.
Yes.
And I think, unlike previous entries where the cast was uniformly quite strong, this is the most character-driven entry in this series. Like,
yeah, I would say that. I could see that.
Like, I think in 3... the cast, uniformly did a great job, but there was sort of a sketch comedy feel to it in a way that I really dug, where, you know, everybody just kind of had their own funny bits going on and we cut to their funny bits. The story was driven more by the Leprechaun, like, fucking their shit, like, jumping into these skits and fucking up their shit, as opposed to Leprechaun in the Hood, where we have, like, 3 protagonists who are driving the story, and Leprechaun is trying to, like, fuck up their story as opposed to their series of bits. And the 3 protagonists, who are played by Anthony Montgomery as Postmaster P, Rashawn Nall as Stray Bullet, and Red Grant as Butch, are very good.
They're excellent.
I think. Yeah. In a way that I don't think we've seen in this series. Like, the protagonists are usually kind of, I don't want to say weakest links, but, like, they're
close
usually not
to?
as com-
Yeah. They're pretty close. Like, usually it's like, they're like, ah, she was the prettiest girl, so we had to put her in there. Like, that's what I feel like. But no, these three had so much chemistry with each other. And just, like, I mean, those were some fucking actors. Like, they really were present and alive. And I just really appreciated everything that they gave throughout this.
Mm-hmm. I feel like... I've been trying to figure out like how to talk about this movie for a while. And I think, Dixon, you really hit on a lot of things that are very key to me about the strengths that this movie has that none of the other Leprechaun movies thus far have had. I have this thing about horror comedy where when it's done well, it's my favorite genre in the world. Because the range of emotions that the movie pulls out of you is so big. And I also kind of have this feeling that comedy is this kind of backdoor way to make you give a fuck about a character. And when characters start dying who have made you laugh, it really, really hurts.
Yeah.
I remember like one of the movies that kicked me into movie puberty was Shaun of the Dead, which I think is a perfect example of that. Because when people start dying, it really, really, really hurts. And I think it's both like, the thing that makes this movie fascinating and effective and like, definitely like provoked some emotions out of me. I don't know whether this is like, it kind of makes it successful as a horror movie, but also makes it like kind of upsetting is that the protagonist in this movie, by God, you give a fuck about them. You want them to live.
Yeah.
That's the first time. This is the first time that's happened in the Leprechaun series that you have protagonists that you're like unironically rooting for, who have dreams and goals that are like clear and make sense to you. And, a lot of the shit in like the final act of this movie is like very, very painful. And while I don't know, Becky, I think it makes complete fucking sense that you are not into that aspect of it, because here's the line that I'm stuck on is like the things that I kind of am fascinated by with this movie, I'm not totally sure how many of them are on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are a lot of things that are done on purpose here. There are a couple moments in this screenplay where I'm like, okay, someone showed up to work that day. That's an interesting line that makes me understand that character. Obviously, like this cast is really solid.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we'll get to the trans stuff in there. I had a lot of very weird reactions to that I don't think were the things that the filmmakers intended.
yeah, I doubt it.
but my reactions aren't even all like, oh, this is insensitive, this is fucked up, fuck this movie. There's plenty of that.
Sure.
But I don't know. There's stuff in like the third act of this movie where our main hero guy, Postmaster P, spends like the whole finale wearing makeup and a dress. And at a certain point, it just stops being a joke. And that's just what our hero is wearing for the last stretch of it. And I'm sure they intended that as a joke, but I'm also like, he kind of just looks like people that I know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Totally. There was something so interesting about that whole beat. And I think what killed it for me is that I knew it was supposed to be like some kind of joke. But to me, it was like incredibly tragic and real and like human that this person who was dressed this way was like weeping at the death of their friend. And I was just, I mean, there was just so much about it, just like straight up visually, that was like really like arresting.
It makes him look like, I don't know, like more vulnerable. Like I keep seeing him in danger in these scenes, and it's like, I don't know, I give a fuck about these characters, so I would have been on edge anyway, but like I don't know. I see people who look like that in like dangerous situations, and like, I don't know, my heart is racing a little faster in ways that I'm not sure that was their goal. But you know, this is the first time that the Leprechaun has ever won.
Yep.
Yeah. And it really, really, really hurts.
Yeah.
Like it, like there are moments in this movie that are like extremely sad. The part where it gets weird is that the ending is really grim and it leaves like a pit in your stomach, and then you get the Leprechaun rap, and then the Leprechaun's rapping, and it left. I mean, the clip of the Leprechaun rapping is the only scene from this franchise that I had seen before we went into it, because like, if you're on bad movie YouTube, eventually that the algorithm is going to show you that scene. I didn't know that it was going to give me the fucking whiplash.
Yeah.
That it did.
Yeah. But
I spent the whole Leprechaun rap being like,
wait, oh, what?
Oh God.
Yeah.
One. Jesus.
Especially because the In the Hood Leprechaun is, as Becky and PJ alluded to, the most threatening version of the Leprechaun that we've seen. Warwick mm-hmm. is taking the performance in a different direction. I think effectively, he's much more subdued. He has much fewer lines,
yeah,
I think.
He does.
And they're usually better at being actual rhymes as opposed to something you expect is going to rhyme and then not. And he is much more like overtly threatening, and like the ways in which he murders people are sudden and visceral as opposed yeah. to kind of like weird, kind of like, I'm granting you a wish, hee hee, no I'm not, kind of things. He's like stabbing his hands through people's
yeah,
chest.
Yeah, he does a lot less gaslighting and a lot more exploding people's entrails with his mind.
Irene, I wanted to ask you, it's safe to say, a big fan of this film. We are talking about it in relation to like how it fits in with the series that we've been spending the past few weeks with. As somebody who said you haven't like rewatched the ones before this, what about mm-hmm. this film is like, what makes you feel this way about it?
Mm-hmm. I think something that was said really stood out that this movie is very like realistic, which that's a weird word to use in this context, but in the sense that these are like actual people,
yeah,
like well done actors who are giving this story about this group of friends who want to get out of the situation that they're in. You know, we have Postmaster P, who has these really strong beliefs about the way that he wants to express the messages that he has in himself, and he wants to get him and his friends into a better place, not always by the best means. And then there's a way to do that kind of weirdly coincides with this, you know, magical Irishman, which is, you know, always helpful. But you know, you learn a lot about these characters and their relationship with each other. Like, I think like the biggest scene that stands out to me is right before they're about to go rob Ice-T's house. Mm-hmm. Is the two characters, Butch, I can't remember the other one's name,
Straight Bullet,
like they're, before Postmaster P gets there, they're like hugging each other and telling each other that they love each other, because they're yeah. literally about to go into a scenario that they might not survive from, you know. Mm. And it just, you know, mystical parts aside, it just feels very real and very warm, and it makes it even that more devastating at the end when his Postmaster P's friends die, and then he ends up, you know, getting mind controlled assumedly forever. And it's just like, it's really jarring. I really enjoy that about movies that don't really give like cookie cutter endings, and like everything doesn't work out, because that's not really always the way that life works. You know, it'd be yeah. great, you know, if the chain could have, you know, fell on the Leprechaun again, but it didn't. And this is, you know, it's just a really devastating ending that really hit me in contrast to the beginning and the friendship that you saw build and form throughout. So I really love the movie for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking about that scene when I was watching it last night. Like that is the exact thing that like stands out to me, is that, I mean, in a lot of these movies, the protagonists are either like, I don't know, a lot of times they dial up what is either like naive about them, to kind of contrast them to all of these other human characters that are like corrupt and goofy. Or maybe they're just like stock horror protagonists who are running away from this thing. And after, you know, in Jennifer Aniston's case in the first movie, after seeing a leprechaun four times, are just like, Ozzy, there's no such thing as leprechauns. Get it through your head. These are human beings who care about each other. And it's, I don't know, it's like, it's weighty. And yeah, I was looking at who made this movie and kind of like how it got made. I think a lot of people assumed, Warwick Davis included, that like Leprechaun 4 in Space was going to be the last one. And Warwick Davis didn't seem heartbroken about that. Not like frustrated to come back, but like, oh wow, there's another one? Okay. Someone at Trimark had done some research on like what demographics like these movies were selling with, and found out that like, yeah, a lot of Black folks were like very interested in the straight to video horror series that they were doing. And they thought, you know, let's give this a try. The behind the scenes crew that they put together, as best as I can tell, remains like a lot of the like middle-aged white guys who have been working on this series up till now. The script is written by, it's credited to two people. It's credited to a guy named John Huffman and a writer named Doug Hall, who, if it's the same guy that I think it is a Black TV writer. He works on a lot of shows for Kenya Barris. He wrote on Blackish for a little while. That's been, I think, the thing that we had been like worrying about up to this point, is like how are they going to be like approaching a lot of this stuff. And I think there's, I don't know, there's definitely stuff in here that feels like weird. Like I don't know how everyone feels about like Lubdon's first quote being like,
oh, bad. I feel bad about it.
It's a Martin Luther King quote, right?
Yes.
As reimagined as like a Freddy Krueger quote.
Yeah.
Yeah, weird. Okay, weird, but there's, this movie is really, like, all over the place. I don't know. There's all this stuff that, like, I don't know, I feel really weird about, but then we'll come back to, like, there's that scene at the beginning where, and Irene, you were kind of making this point about how, like, the things that they want, that these human protagonists want, are, like, pretty understandable. You know, they have pretty basic, easy to root for needs and wants of like survival. Like no one in this series has had a better reason for wanting like the gold or the flute that they can find.
Yep.
Stray has this line early on where he says like, you know, he kind of has a case to make. He says like, we're just playing the hand that we're dealt. You know, they have this rap group. I found out that like pretty much all of their raps were written by like this older middle-aged white guy, which you can tell from doing research on it, but you can also tell from
watching, you know, movie.
Listening to them. Yeah. But it's also like another weird thing about this movie is that it's also pretty weirdly invested in like in their dreams and in them wanting to be successful. And you can tell because the movie is structured like a musical. Like there's almost this like Josie and the Pussycats, like Scott Pilgrim thing, where like the songs that they perform are these like structural checkpoints for the movie. It leaves me wishing that they were like, you know, good. but like, I don't know. This movie is a lot closer to the really, really, really good version of itself than I thought it was going to be. And the things that are good, like, I don't know, man, they stand out. This is a weird one.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what makes this sort of painful, is because I totally agree with you, Irene, about what's special about the movie. I mean, the journey that our protagonists are going through, it's like such a human, you know, such a human, realistic, honest journey that they're going on. And then it's just hard for me to stomach that out of the entire franchise, the Leprechaun only wins against black people. Like, I didn't love that, like, all of the shitty white protagonists that we've been making fun of this whole time, like, they get away? And Postmaster P, who didn't even want to rob someone's house, who had to kill someone, and out of the three of them, he was the most nervous and wanting to, like, uphold his own values. Like, it's just, like, such a fall from grace. It's really hard to watch. And so much of the tragedy in this is, like, to me, not earned, because it's not fully scary enough to me. Like, this is the closest to a horror movie, but I wasn't scared, you know. I was just like, oh, this is a call to a lot of horror movies. It has a lot of the same sort of tricks and stuff. But the horror didn't match up with, like, the tragedy. So I'm just left sort of feeling like their story was cheapened by, like, really gruesome moments. I think that's why I feel sort of like a weird feeling about it.
Mm. I mean, that's completely understandable. I completely agree that I do find it quite odd that, you know, out of all the movies, like, this is the one where, like, all the black people have to die. But as far as the horror not necessarily matching up with the tragedy, I think that life is really hard, you know? Mm. Life is really hard, and there are a lot of people who have a lot of dreams. There are a lot of people who I know who live down the street from me who can sing better than anyone on the radio. And the likeliness of them making it, of me making it, it's low, you know? And I feel like the reason that I enjoy this movie, and even though it's very painful that they didn't succeed, and the reason that it hurts so much, is because that feels, that's the fear for me. That's what's really scary, is that no matter how hard I try, no matter what I do, no matter how much I put myself out there, even if I have a fucking magic flute that makes everyone stare at me
while I... That makes Coolio just enter wherever he
wants. Right, like, what was that cameo? But it's not enough. And the,
like,
powers,
that's kind of the horror of it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And the powers that be, magical or corporate or otherwise, are gonna, you know, keep me on their strings and their hand on my neck, or their leprechaun hand through my chest. So, like, you know, and I think that's what I get the most out from it.
Oof, I love that answer. That is very fair. Because it is, I mean, like, I'm living that as well, where you're just like, you'll never know. And here we are, and we keep trying, and it's scary every single day just to continue on. I wasn't particularly keyed into that, but I think that if you're watching that in that headspace, and, like, if you're really, like, looking at them through the same lens as your own, you're right. This is a horror movie for sure. I think it's just like, I think the Leprechaun cheapens what otherwise was really beautiful about this movie. And so I think that's what I'm left feeling, but I totally respect that and relate to it, honestly.
Irene, on that note, you do not have to do this, but would you feel capable and comfortable giving a summary of the film, Leprechaun in the Hood? It's okay if you don't, we can...
Like, just of the entire, like, plot of the movie?
Yeah. Fuck yeah.
Feel so no pressure.
So Ice-T, in his leading role in Law & Order SVU, is cracking a drug bust in the subways of Compton. like
wait, that's so man, true.
This black hippie, a blippy, if you will, has this map. Where he got it from, we do not know. But he has a map that leads him into this place where other people have been. And he finds this leprechaun statue that has a gold chain, but he doesn't care about that. He just wants the flute because I think he knows that the flute will give him the ability to become a great music producer or music maker, whatever he wants. His friend ends up taking the necklace. Leprechaun comes to life, tries to kill him the first time, but Ice-T, you know, by the luck of the Irish, I guess, the necklace falls back on Ice on the leprechaun, and he's able to get away. By this time, we meet our three protagonists who are, you know, trying to make it, doing this, you know, very wholesome rap, no bitches, no hoes here, and they're trying to convince Ice-T, who is now, you know, the leader of this music dynasty, to give them a chance to produce them. Ice-T wants to change their whole image, and Postmaster P is like, no, man, like, Christian rap's the ray of the future, like, positivity, man. And Ice-T's like, get the fuck out of here. So they decide that they're going to rob him instead and just take what they need and get out of there. Doesn't go well at all. Leprechaun comes back to life. And honestly, I'm giving a summary. We'll get back to that.
No, go off.
I was gonna say, my favorite part of this movie, and back to the realism aspect, is I feel like a lot of people see the leprechaun and they like try to talk to him, or they're like, what do you want? Or they're, I mean, maybe just generally freaked out, which is understandable. But these three protagonists see this leprechaun and they're immediately like, no. And they pull their guns out and start fucking shooting him. like
I'm correct, like, call.
Yeah,
the right thing to do.
Yeah, the right thing to do. So basically, the leprechaun is trying to get his flute back and his money, while the three protagonists are trying to get to this competition so they can win and become big, you know, rap stars and move out of Compton. Ultimately, you know, losing friends, pastors along the way, and ultimately don't end up getting what they wanted. Beautiful. Or I guess Postmaster P does get what he wants, but not in the way that he thought.
You're right. Careful what you wish for.
That was a fucking solid, not sweaty summary.
Yeah.
Which is not what we usually do on this show.
No, we're usually just stressed for the whole time.
Yeah. I usually remember that we have to do it and then say, Becky, you do it, so that I don't have to.
Yeah, that was amazing, Irene.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I think the opening scene that you're describing for Ice-T, who we haven't really talked about, but does a great job. I love Ice-T in this movie.
He shows up, yeah.
Yeah, he is really giving, because I feel like I'm not sure if the direct-to-video formula was quite as, like, set and unmalleable as it is now, but usually the above the title big name star of the film, who's not like the monster, is going to be in it for like 5 minutes and sitting down. Like, you watch any movie that Steven Seagal has made in the past 5 years, it's going to be like Steven Seagal in The Army Guy. And it's going to be not about Steven Seagal, but there'll be like one scene where a guy is like, he's the best army guy that there is, and talk to Steven Seagal sitting down being like, I was in the army and I was really good at it. But Ice-T is the secondary antagonist. He's in quite a bit of this movie, and he shows up.
Oh,
he is,
yeah,
really like giving it his all, and it's great to see.
Yeah. Yeah, he... really brought so much credibility to the movie, just because he took everything with like Shakespearean like severity. It was really great.
Mm-hmm. And like, I always feel a bit weird speculating as to what may or may not be ad-libs in these movies, but I think Ice-T is getting off some good ones, which is remarkable for this series, because this is a series that has by and large been marred by some truly heinous ad-libs where someone is just like yelling about the exact situation they're in, like all of the information that they're ad-libbing is being conveyed visually. But like, when he first sort of falls under the leprechaun's thrall and becomes his agent of finding the flute, the leprechaun rips off one of his fingers and he runs out of the men's room screaming, "Look at my fucking finger," which is so funny.
Also, this, like, right before it, I have seen this clip on YouTube at some point, and I didn't know what it, I mean, I knew it must have been from Leprechaun of some kind, but when the leprechaun has Ice-T's finger in his hand, and he goes, "Knock, knock," and Ice-T is like, "Who's there?" He really earnestly is asking who's behind the door. And that's so funny. And when I watched that part, I realized how not funny this movie is, because that was so funny. And the rest of it is just like a serious artistic, mildly scary movie, in my opinion. And so, and as compared to In Space, which is just like, you know, an improv scene yeah. in space, or Leprechaun 3, which is my personal favorite so far, which is like, that one is just so funny. Every minute there was something really, really, really funny. And so I found this really, this turn in the series of like, we're just going to make a straight like horror movie with like protagonists you care about and they're going to die. I found that really, I really realized that when I laughed at the Ice-T moment, because I was like, oh yeah, this hasn't happened much.
Mm-hmm.
I really thought I was going to be more satisfied by seeing the leprechaun smoke a joint.
Yeah, like, me too.
I really, you know what? Okay, so I know about the next movie that he actually gets high, which is the thing that I needed. I needed to see Lubdon, like, not at full power, inebriated, uncomfortable, running into stuff, getting anxious, talking for too long, doing some real PJ shit. We didn't get it this time. He's just kind of like, ooh, curious aroma. Like, on the comedic level, what I do think this movie does a pretty good job with is, like, some of the fish out of water stuff. Like, you know, sometimes you just got to go into the bathroom and run into Lubdon, and there he is, and you smoke him out. Sometimes you just gotta. Mm-hmm. There's also one of the things that makes these human characters very vulnerable and makes you very protective of them is, like, Postmaster P has a grandma, a blind grandma,
yeah.
who is, bless her, who's so, like,
she's so good in it as well.
She's, like, not very cartoony. That's just, like, a sweet old lady. And I think it's a dream that Postmaster has where the leprechaun is looking for them and goes into her apartment, and she just decides to start making him soup. And I'm like, it is this very weird emotion, because I'm like, please don't hurt her.
Yeah.
I'm very worried. I can't watch this. But also, like, he's kind of just going with it. Like, this lady is just being sweet to him. She's, like, feeling his hands and is like, honey, you got bad arthritis. And it's like, I don't know. Like, what is this movie?
So, interesting.
It was one of those moments where, like, I kind of get the, maybe this movie doesn't like get enough credit things, where I'm just like, this is surrealist and weird and like kind of emotional. And it, look, a lot of it might be a fucking accident, but I'm on this show to review the object that ended up in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
22 years later, you know, it's this thing. And I think, like, you know, this was made for like the home video market. This was made to be like, this was made for people to like smoke weed and drink beer and like have a laugh and watch it. And, you know, we should mention that like while Post, Stray, and Butch are like on the run from Mac Daddy and from the Leprechaun, one of the places that they do stay is that they know a lady named Miss Fontaine. No, hold, before we go into all the Miss Fontaine shit, do you remember what her job is? Is she like a straight up sex worker? Or does she work in music?
Yeah, I was not sure.
She mentioned that she loved listening to music, but I don't think she was very specific about what she did.
Yeah,
she seemed very willing to have sex with people, but yeah, that's all I got.
She seems open-minded. I just remember like there's that scene where halfway through they have like one of their most successful like performances ever, and she's on stage with them.
I know, that was really funny.
She's their hype lady. Good for them. I mean, she's this person who lives in their neighborhood who I guess they've known for a while, and there's like a running like gay panic joke where they're like disgusted by her, and like,
I think,
boy,
we should say she's a trans woman. I don't think we've said that yet.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, thank you. She is loudly a trans woman, and it's played for this like, ooh, that's fucking weird, like joke. But I don't know. It's this is going to be an instance of me giving the movie credit for something that it may not have worked for. Another thing that I think is like interesting, maybe by accident, is like, I don't know, they're weird about it, but she is part of their neighborhood. Like, she does live around these guys, and she is giving them sanctuary.
And they went to her for it.
I find that very interesting. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, it's like, even though they're, like, misgendering her and, like, being really fucking weird, I do find it interesting that they're like, we need help, and we know who to go to for it.
Well, they do have a lot of, like, uh-oh looks at each other, and there I think there is a moment where like Miss Fontaine like gives like a look or a gesture to Butch, and he gives this kind of look.
That, but I believe you.
But there are moments of the thing that you're talking about, and like Irene, like, yeah, they go to her. She's like a facet of this neighborhood. You know, we should say, like, there's a lot of disgusting shit here, but you know, they go to her place to crash there. The Leprechaun comes in. She makes an advance on him, brings him into the bedroom, and he, oh my God, what is that fucked up wish I didn't laugh at that line that he has, where he's like, I didn't come here to look at a fruit. I came in here to get my flute.
Yeah, and like 5 minutes later, he's like doing missionary.
Okay, so wait a second. Let's talk about it, okay?
Yeah.
Look, there's, okay. One of the tropes with like the way that trans people have been represented in media for a really long time is gay panic humor, people barfing in disgust at a chick with a dick. And the other thing is, like, for the longest time, if you were like a transgender woman who was like getting into acting, I think there was some statistic about like the sweeping majority of roles that people were actually getting were as sex workers and sex workers who die. That is one of the most like persistent portrayals of transgender women in media. And like, they, Post, Stray, and Butch hear her making some sort of vocalization. They come into the room, and it looks both to them and to the audience like they're fucking, you know, like Love Dawn is getting a little bit of tea for tea. But then they flip it around, and they're, you know, Love Dawn is like choking her out, and then is out of there, and it's treated like a joke.
I'm gonna say though, I think it was both, because it doesn't take that long to die. Like that, those sounds from her were going on for a very long time. So I think it was both. I stick to that story.
Maybe it started as one and became the other. Look, I don't know. What we're finding out on this series, Lubdon is multifaceted. Mm-hmm. Okay? These things are... Maybe I shouldn't be, like, joking about this in the context of, like, something that's pretty brutal and upsetting, but here's... If I can get sentimental and emotional and weird on the podcast, this has been a really, like, weird year or two for me. One of the goofy things about this podcast is, like, while we're fucking shit posting on an audio medium about, like, Floop from Spy Kids and, like, Big Lawyer, Big Liar, Big Dilemma, I've been quietly transitioning over the course of, like, the entire time that this podcast has been going on. And I've had some, like, unbelievable allies in the form of Dixon and Becky, but also, like, Irene fucking Polk, who has had my back in, like, really, really big, substantive, like material ways. But one of the things that I go through in all of this is, like, I deal with a lot of, like, imposter syndrome. Like, anyone who only knows me from hearing this podcast would very fairly just assume that I'm, like, a doodly doodly dude. Because unlike a lot of, like, binary trans girls, I haven't gone through vocal training. I try to have, like, my full range of expression available to me because I'm in a talking medium. And sometimes I wonder, like, do I actually count, or am I just, like, a very extra dude bro in a wig? But here's the thing. Here's the thing about that. Putting on makeup and putting on a wig and earrings and then going and walking the street, that's all it takes, baby.
Yep.
That is all it takes for them to look at you different and treat you different, regard you differently, and for you to get a very different angle on the world around you and what not only trans people are going through, but what anyone who's, like, feminine or femme goes through. You get a very, very different angle on some shit. And there's something about, you know, Miss Fontaine dies pretty brutally, and you know, the movie treats it like a joke, and it's annoying. And I'm sure when this came out, like, a lot of the people who were watching this to, like, get stoned to it were, like, laughing at that, I'm sure. But there's this thing where, like, Butch and Post mourning Stray, which is easily the most heartbreaking and sad death in the whole series, the only way that they can infiltrate the club at the end to try to, like, stop Lubdon is by putting on dresses and wigs and makeup. And people keep saying to Post, like, damn, you actually look really good. Like, whoa, what's up? They start treating him differently. And there's something about how, like, even when you view yourself as, like, different from, like, this community, it doesn't take much for people to start treating you differently. Mm. If you put on, if you are just, like, the manliest man manning down Man Street, if you put on a wig and some makeup, an address, and you go somewhere in public, you get caught up really quick.
Yeah.
And the things that you thought you were separate from, you're not. And in the end, dude, the leprechaun comes for everybody. Maybe that's a little bit of, like, the stuff that Irene, that I think you put so beautifully, is, like, you know, I don't know what you want to, like, I don't know what anyone here wants to cast the leprechaun as, like, a metaphor for here, but, like, yeah, there's something, like, chilling and unpleasant and, like, accidentally very fucking real about the places that this movie goes. And look, I, you know, the director of this movie is this, like, this weird beardy white guy named Rob Spera, who directed, like, straight to video horror, and now he directs Criminal Minds. Look, I don't know if he was, like, I don't know, playing with a, if he was like a toddler playing with a gun here who didn't know how potent the shit that he was dealing with is. But like, I don't know, man, what a picture. The leprechaun comes for everybody. None of us are safe. We're all part of an ecosystem. We're all connected. I don't know. Was that anything? Am I making any sense here?
Totally.
Yeah, no, I think completely.
You put so much of that beautifully, and like, I really appreciate you putting your own perspective as a trans human into what it was like to watch those really grim, very real parts of this movie that absolutely were put in to be the butt of a joke. And I think that you give it a lot more credit than I think it ever thought it would get. I think what was really
to Irene for starting that, by the way.
Yeah.
Thank you for giving us permission to be extremely earnest on the leprechaun podcast.
100%. Yes. And I think that, and but the movie also just like warrants it. I mean, these actors are special. Mm-hmm. I think what I didn't like also about Miss Fontaine's death is, similarly to like no other time ever in the franchise does the leprechaun win, except for like in this like black community, this is the first time the leprechaun has ever fucked anyone, and it's a trans woman, and the woman dies. And I found that distasteful because it was never a part of the universe before. Yeah. And it wasn't funny to me. It was very sad, and it was very like, it felt very cheap and uncomfortable and scary, which maybe that's the point, which it's hard for me to sort of believe that that's fully the point. You know, it did feel like it was for a laugh, but I just felt like, you know, it's made in 2000. I can't expect much more, but it did feel really icky. And I think at that point I was just like, okay, so we're breaking rules when it's at the expense of like these really marginalized groups, like, you know, I don't know. Not that Leprechaun has ever been consistent on any kind of rule.
Well, this is one of the first, if not the first Leprechaun movie to go back and use some of its pre-established lore.
Yes.
Irene, I don't know if you remember from the first four movies, but every one of those, it's a completely different set of circumstances. The leprechaun has a completely different weakness. In the first one, it's a four-leaf clover. In the second one, it's wrought iron. In the third one, I don't remember. In the fourth one, it's getting sucked out of an airlock. But I'll this one, yeah. if you're me or a loved one, like an airlock will get you. But this one actually goes back. It uses the four-leaf clover from the first one. It uses the medallion that freezes the leprechaun. That's from the third one, I think.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know why they chose now to be like, okay, like, let's use some of this pre-established universe stuff, which, by the way, Butch learns by reading Leprechaun for Dummies, in a joke I laughed at pretty hard. The other joke I laughed at was this Scooby-Doo-ass gag.
Oh my god.
Where they're running. 10 out of 10. Yeah, where Stray and Post and Butch are running from Mac Daddy, and they hole up in a room, and they're talking about their plan to get out of there, and they're like, sounds good? And they're like, sounds good. And they like dap each other down the line, and then Butch turns and daps the leprechaun, and they all do the look forward and then scream. It's great. I had a great time with that bit. and thus was really, I agree with what we're talking about in that the tone of this movie did feel a lot more serious and real. But I think there were enough moments of like complete Looney Tunes levity for me to be shocked at the places that it went. Mm-hmm. Particularly in one of the scenes we've referenced, Stray's death, which is pretty haunting, honestly. They, with the power of the golden flute, which is pretty haunting, with the power of the leprechaun's golden flute, they put on a really great show, which is, I think, their audition to get to this Las Vegas competition. And they're upstairs in a loft celebrating and then the leprechaun finds them. Stray Bullet points a gun at the leprechaun, and the leprechaun does leprechaun hand gestures to make Stray point the gun at Butch until Post gives up the flute, which he does. Post offers up the flute. The leprechaun takes it. The leprechaun gives one last little jab about how you could have been really famous. And Post gets mad and charges the leprechaun, who does another hand gesture at Post, freezes him, and then with his other hand makes possesses Stray's gun and makes Stray put the gun under his chin and shoot himself.
Yeah.
And it's never anything like that on the series before. It is acted extraordinarily well by Post and Stray and Butch and Warwick Davis, who he does not quip. He is just looking extremely angrily at all of them and like doing pretty committed physical work with the hand gestures, making very clear with his eyes that like, you messed up. Like, I'm doing this because you messed up. You know, it's really fucking icky.
Yeah, totally.
And I did not expect this movie to be the one that, when you know, the movie opens, it is a fun bit. Like, as you said, Irene, Ice-T has a map to a subway of Compton where people have been before.
There's a baseball bat out of his afro.
Oh my God, how did I forget? Oh my God.
Oh my God, death by a hair pick.
That's a meme though. Like, you know that meme where it's like, there's a guy like mining for gold and he gives up. And the person who just keeps going is going to find it. That's the man who left his beer and his pizza right outside the wall of the leprechaun shrine.
Oh my God, you're right. It didn't even occur to me how crazy that is.
Yeah.
He was so close to greatness, he didn't even know.
Finish his meal.
I think there was still like 4 bottles of that 6-pack left. Like, come on.
You're just like, yeah, I'm done.
I do have a question though, for the dead horsies who have seen, like, very recently seen the other Leprechaun movies.
Hell yeah.
And talking about the lore and the things that are brought back from the previous movies, can we talk about the Leprechaun's powers?
Yes.
Because I feel like his range of power in this movie made me feel like this leprechaun was the most petty individual in the world, because he could kill you.
Yes.
He could just kill you. He could like Resident Evil Wesker his arm through your body. He could make you explode. He can make you like manipulate your own like body against itself. And he has heat powers. He can make the guns hot. He can do all these things. And I'm like, could he do all of these things before?
It's like, such a hard answer. Because it's like, are they the same leprechaun? They're all in different universes. They're defeated in various ways. One of them is literally still in space as we speak, just like ballooning, exploded like cells. So I feel like it's like a anthology of various leprechauns from various situations. But it's insane to me that all the powers are always so different, because he does, you put it perfectly, he does come across as none other than petty, because he could just end this all in a heartbeat, but instead he's just like, it's kind of fun to string you along.
You know? Do you want to play a game?
On his little trike. Yeah, it's so confusing. I read what I like, the description I really liked that I read was the most inconsistent telekinesis.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, that's perfect. That's his powers. Like sometimes he can like literally go to another place in time. Like he can just like show up at the hospital you just ran to. And then sometimes he can't get through a closed door.
Yeah. Sometimes he can grant wishes. And yeah, like Becky, like you're saying, there was a scene in this one where he's just like rubbing his little hands on the door and you're expecting a spell to happen that's going to make the door open. But he was just doing that to rub the door.
And laughing like it's a good bit.
It's all part of the plan.
when I bust in here.
I think we're worse for having watched them all recently. Like, it's way better if you haven't seen them recently, because then you're like, oh yeah, these are his powers, I forgot.
Yeah, you could imagine that, like, okay, yeah, no, like, this is clearly within the established rules of what the leprechaun is capable of. We've never seen him blow up a guy's tummy before.
That stressed me out. I was like, oh, wait.
Pick a lane.
Yeah, he's done, like, ironic punishments before. Like, he's inflated a woman who, you know, wished to be beautiful. He's like, made a magic show go horribly awry when a guy wanted to do a good magic show. But in this, he just walks up.
Oldest trick in the book.
Just blows up people's tummies.
Yeah.
He's over it.
And then he fucks all these women to death. I was like, oh, God.
Jesus Christ. I mean, Irene, have we talked about the, like, Becky mentioned it a second ago, but, like, have we talked about the there are multiple leprechauns theory?
No.
I mean, it kind of checks out, right? That, like, somewhere there's, call it a planet, call it a dimension, call it the nation of Ireland, where there's, like, one megalep.
With a shared consciousness.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Do you think they have, like, a hive mind? Like, they can feel each other's, like when Lubdon is, like, getting some, like, tea for tea with, like, Miss Fontaine, there's, like, another leprechaun somewhere just, like, cumming his brains out.
Oh, like, yeah, definitely some, like, Sense 8 magic going on there. Yeah.
Yes! You get it. You get the leprechaun. I just like the idea of, like, lots of them in one space, like, walking around each other with, like, overlapping Warwick voices. Can someone who's good at Photoshop please put that image together? Planet, like, Lubdon.
Walking around in, like, the Men in Black underground hideout where they're all Danny Elfman score.
Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. Where have you been all my life?
Would they like each other?
Do you think they kiss?
Top of the morning. Does he ever say top of the morning?
No, and it's fucked up.
I know, that's, like, our biggest qualm.
Let's get this shit.
I was gonna say, also, Irene, like, no flute in any of no flute in any other film. There's no flute power. And also funny that, like, the necklace is brought back to this one, but isn't even the most important magic in the movie. The flute is way more important. It's just so funny how his powers are so inconsistent.
He has wanted he gulled less and less with each successive movie. The first film, you know, we're talking about characterization and clear motivation. The leprechaun wants he gold and was about to leave them alone until he found out, well, there's a coin missing. And every subsequent movie, the gold is, like, further and further from his mind until this one where he want he flute.
Yeah.
Which, to me, not as catchy.
not as.
Can I say, though, like, speaking of the flute, I'm actually, and I don't know if this was, like, a mistake in the writing that they didn't think through, but in my mind, the flute was going to be a big win for the rap group because Postmaster P was going to be able to continue doing his wholesome rapping, but use the flute so that people would like it. Whereas when I noticed that even after they got the flute, they still turned to doing raunchy, like, cursey whole music. And I'm like, so you're still, like, giving up who you are.
That's such a good point. I didn't even think about that.
And it was just a little jarring to me. I'm like, I thought that this was what the flute was for. Like, once you realize that this is how you use the flute, that you could still stay true to yourself and make it. But immediately was like, if I can't find Jesus and Mary and Joseph, I'll go get a prostitute or whatever. Yeah. So I was like, I don't, like, what?
Yeah.
The performance that the flute is so powerful, it just brings Coolio in. who is not addressed other than Postmaster going, "That's Coolio."
Yeah.
Just cut to him in the reverse shot. Like, yeah, that's good. But like, it's a whole, it's a performance where they're in a church and they're just like questioning their relationship with Jesus is like the thrust of the song.
Which is another like deep conversation we could have if we wanted to have one. Like the lyrics are like, is God actually looking out for me? Where is he?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I know this is also supposed to be funny because you're kind of being like very raunchy in a place like this, but in my mind, I'm like, that's painful.
Yes.
Very painful. But like you're going to this place for another place to go for solitude and sanctuary to hide from something evil. But even inside, you're like, is God looking out for me? Because I have to resort to magic and not him.
Mm-hmm.
To help me get out of this situation.
Dude, you are so right.
Damn. I'm this movie is kind of fucking potent, man.
Yeah.
In that scene, what I remember is like Post keeps like setting up the first half of a couplet with like Jesus loves me this I know, and Stray is the one who like comes up with a rhyme like on the fly. That ends up being like something raunchier.
Mm-hmm. And he goes, Jesus loves me, I don't know.
Yeah, there you go.
Change it to I don't know instead of.
Or if I can't find him, I'll find a hoe. That is an interesting point though, PJ, because it also seems like a contrast of like Postmaster trying to maintain like this wholesome like belief that they can make it. And then his friend is just being like, no, that's not the way.
Yeah.
Right. Mm.
I mean, Stray is the one who has the idea, like, what if we went in there and robbed Stray? What if we went in there and robbed Mac Daddy? He's the one who has the line, we're just playing the hand we've been dealt. And, you know, for a while, I'm kind of relieved that they didn't lean too hard on making it like a morality tale between the two of them. Because I don't know how you feel about this, but I kind of felt like they really are just like two different attitudes about dealing with like the same shit platter that their lives have handed them.
Yeah.
And like when Stray fucking bites it in the saddest scene in the franchise, like it doesn't really feel like a moment of like comeuppance or something like that. It kind of just feels unfair. You know, mm-hmm. The other thing we haven't even talked about is this, like, this running gag of Butch, who's, you know, in the trio of them, you know, Post is this very, like upstanding, like apple shining, earnest dude with this very clear, earnest mission about, like, what kind of art he wants to be making. Stray is the one who's like kind of looking for like a backdoor way to try to like survive and get to the thing that they're doing. And Butch is both like an absolute goofball and also in a like Saturday morning cartoon detail is like a chemistry expert.
So smart. He's Bubbles and Donatello. Like mixed in one.
He's like a goofball and also a scientific genius, but he's also the one who's like an innocent. The running joke that they keep coming back to is that he's a virgin, mm-hmm. and like everybody knows it about him. It seems like he's trying to be discreet about it, but everyone knows it and everyone's fucking roasting him for it.
Is he being discreet about it? Because he's like, I could get some pussy tonight. And it's like, all right, buddy.
Is there pussy in heaven?
It is a credit to that performer that he makes that line as tragic as it is. He is lying there shot. Mac Daddy like shoots him and it's his last line before he passes it. I don't even think he says, is there pussy in heaven? I think he says, is there a pussy heaven? And it is really emotionally affecting. Like Post is looking at him saying this, and then when Post turns around, there are tears falling down his face.
Literally,
and you're like, there
weeping.
Would be mine too.
Yeah.
It's like another moment of like this thing that's supposed to be goofy flips into like fucking tragic.
Yeah.
Because this guy has this like whole future that he never got to have. And his like makeup wearing best friend is like weeping over his body. It's like, I don't know. What the fuck is this movie? The one bit of cast trivia that I have, because like I tried to do some research on like some of these actors. I think Anthony Montgomery and Mershon Nall have like they've been like, I think they've just been like working TV actors for a couple years. I couldn't find any interviews that any of them were like dying to hop into to reminisce about this movie that, you know, who knows how they feel about it. But Red Grant, the guy who plays Butch, has also been like a working actor for a while, is also like was a pretty accomplished stand-up comedian for a while. Mm. He is currently running for the mayor of Washington, D.C.
What?
Huh.
I swear to God. Hold on. Let me pull.
Fascinating.
Let him do it.
Let him run. He's got the chemistry background.
He's Red Leprechaun for dummies. He knows a lot of shit.
The strats are there.
God. If you go to grant4mayor.com, you can check out the Rodney Red Grant for Mayor website. You can learn all about his platform. You can see lots of handsome pictures of him with his family. And you can click here to request your yard sign today.
Listen, what button do I gotta push?
Should that be my moving out of the apartment parting gift?
Yes, I accept. Okay. Don't tell me about his political interests either. Makes no matter to him. Me.
No, that would kind of spoil the fun, wouldn't right. it?
Yeah, they'll be like, oh, you support him? I'm like, yeah, 100%.
He's like, replace the entire Smithsonian Institute with Amazon warehouses. And Irene and I are just like, nope, can't hear you. La, 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 la.
That's Butchie.
That's our little Butchie.
What if it's all like Irish stuff? What if it's all very like IRA based? What I learned on this set of Leprechaun in the Hood.
What else can we say about this movie? Irene, do you have anything else that you want to say or cover about this movie or anything else that we didn't touch on?
Listen, when the Lep in the Hood comes to do no good.
Jesus Christ.
Listen.
What can you do but sit back and enjoy the show?
Poor Warwick, man. It doesn't even seem like he's having all that much fun.
That was my feeling too.
See, I didn't get that vibe. Like, I think the performance is much less hammy than it is in previous films, but I think that's a bit more of an adaptation. It struck me more as an adaptation to the material as opposed to him like enjoying himself less, because I think he puts a lot of work in trying to be this new, more overtly threatening version of the Leprechaun. Like, yeah,
very well could be.
In the moments where he has to get across like a sense of danger and menace that truly has never existed in this franchise before. He's never really been called upon to do anything other than be mm-hmm. like, ah, you know?
Annoying.
Yeah. It is the most like overtly annoying of any of the horror movie franchise monsters, I think. But when he's called upon to actually be like, no, this is a real threat, I think he does a pretty admirable job of being scary. Like, not in the sense of like I am frightened, but in the sense of like this is not someone to be fucked with, you know?
Yeah, no, that's true. That's totally true.
I found myself hating him more. Like, it might not have been like Becky, you, I think, put this really well. It's like, this movie isn't traditionally scary in the ways that, like, really in control of themselves horror movies always are, but it is, like, it is fucking freaky. It does instill dread. Mm-hmm. And where, like, I don't know, I've been all, like, cutie-poo on this podcast about, like, I don't know, Irene and I were talking about it last night, like, one of the weird reoccurring powers that Love Don has is that he just keeps taking lady form. It's the only way to achieve the things that he wants to do. It's really the simplest, quickest way is to just be, to just become a beautiful lady and kiss boys. God, he loves it. But well, I've been cutie about that and kind of like backdoor rooting for him in like the way that you root for like Freddy Krueger on like the fifth or sixth movie. This was the first time that I was ever like, get away from these people.
Yeah.
Like I wanted people to be safe from him. But that,
which is to the movie's credit. Like I can say like, that's good. That's the first time we felt this way in a horror franchise. Maybe we probably should the whole time, but I will say.
Oh no.
Oh no.
Oh no.
Dixon's power went out.
The leprechaun fucked him.
Fuck to death.
Look at his face.
I know. I was like, I would have never known. I just thought he was being really in.
Yeah, concentrating on.
Really receptive.
Oh, yeah, it's buddy. Okay. We'll just give it a bouse. Just finishing that last point. But I just think it's hard for me to root for this sudden change in tone when it's at the expense of people I really cared about versus like in previous ones where it's like, I much would have preferred like, you know, like the shitty slasher films where like the annoying high school archetypes die. You're like, yeah, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, so it's hard for me to really like strap in for this, but I think I can appreciate that like they actually did something right in that it's quite grim and like there's something to be said for that for sure.
Yeah.
There's stakes. There's like actual stakes in this one where Irene, I don't know if you remember Leprechaun in Space, but
you know what? Y'all talking about it has triggered a memory inside my soul. Really? Because that's actually the movie that I saw PJ watching.
Oh, really? Oh,
that's right.
Mm-hmm.
It is a mess.
I have so many questions, but I don't want them answered.
No.
I want to be ignorant. I want to stay ignorant for the rest of my life.
I do think Hood is a million times better than Space, so for sure.
We're wrapping it up here. There's only so much that you can say about Love Don and the Zombie Fly Girls.
Love Don. That sounds like an R&B name. Like an R&B rap name.
Is that the kind of music that he would do, though? Like, the stuff that we hear? Or do you feel like it would be, like, way, I don't know, silkier?
I mean, you heard it. Like, from the mean streets and pubs of Ireland. From his heart.
He
gave us
it.
That rap. So, I mean, I think it's up to the viewers to decide.
I think it's something along the lines of, Ireland's the place where I learned me thing. I think it's
crazy how Lin-Manuel Miranda like wrote that song for them. No, I'm kidding. this is such a what a weird object. Irene, have you seen the one that comes after this, Back to the Hood?
I've seen it once. Yes.
Okay. Do you have any like? I mean, we generally try to go into these things cold, but do you have any, like, warnings to issue?
I did not enjoy it as much as I enjoyed this one. That's all I remember. I was like, this will be the first and last time I watched this movie, because I just did not. It didn't have the same heart, I feel like.
Right.
And, I mean, that's your... I mean, you put it really, really beautifully earlier in the episode, but, like... Am I correct that that's kind of, like, your thesis about this movie, is that, like, there's like, a heart here? Let me Let me give you the floor. Let me give you the final word on Leprechaun 5.
Yeah, totally. Like I said, you know, obviously there's a leprechaun involved and there's a lot of goofs and gags, but I feel like as an artist who, you know, maybe isn't hoping to be like super rich and super famous, but who has dreams and aspirations that include being far from where I am right now, it's a tragedy tale of the fact that there's a good percentage of people, me and people in my life who might not make it out, who might literally die trying to be better than they are and never quite get there. And it's very scary. And it makes you really think about, you know, what you're making important in your life and what you're striving for and being able to live with yourself. And the things that you have done and the things that you want to do. And it's very weird that this movie made me think that way. You know, I like, it just ended up making me be like, geez, you know, nobody made it. Nobody made it out. You know, the group who had these like very like beautiful aspirations of like not even just being like a raunchy rap group who like curses and talks about money and women, but who wanted something more, and you know, the pawn shop owners, and you know, Fontaine, this beautiful woman who takes people in and helps them and accepts them, and none of them were able to escape the horrors of Compton. And, you know, maybe that's life sometimes.
That's fucking beautiful.
So well put.
Yeah.
True. Absolutely. Yeah. And talking to you more about it, Irene, I do feel like I've come around to the movie more after our discussion. Like, I feel like there's more to be, I think what it is like, if this movie feels so unfair. Yeah. But yeah. Life is unfair. And I think I just was, like, not cool with, like, obviously, like, the stuff that's, like, mega not PC and, like, all that stuff, for sure. But besides that, it was so hard to see characters that were, like, genuinely... I mean, Anthony... what's his name?
Montgomery?
Our lead. Yeah, Anthony Montgomery is so talented and just, like, really, like, a real talent. It was so hard to see him not win against a leprechaun that you put so beautifully is just petty. He's just petty. And for this petty ass bitch to win, it like pissed me off. It didn't feel as it was there wasn't the grandeur of like a Greek tragedy, which is what I was experiencing in my heart. But I do think that there are way more lessons to be gleaned from this than I ever would have dreamed. I thought this was going to be so much more vapid and stupid, yeah. Like, and like just like absolutely exploitive than it was. And I mean, that's to its credit. Mm-hmm. So
I think also this movie is not hurt by like it coming in sort of the marathon of watching, but definitely made more jarring. I think all of our various reactions to it, Becky PJ and I's, are amplified by the fact that this is such a jarring tonal shift shift in subject matter, shift in like the veracity of the circumstances the characters are undergoing, that I think everything that we felt on viewing was sort of like amplified by like, whoa, this is extremely different, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was creepy and it was hard to watch. And I think I literally at the beginning of this said it's not to its credit, and I think I've changed my mind. I think I just found it hard to deal with, you know?
I mean,
yeah.
Oh, no, Dixon, go ahead.
Oh, and I was just going to echo that point. It is just, like, unexpectedly quite a bit to deal with.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't... Even in the movies in this franchise up until this point that I've enjoyed the most, which are 2 and especially 3, it was never like, you never really had to think watching these movies. Like, no. I feel like some of the deeper analysis that we were doing on them was made in like, you know, like in a joking manner or like kind of half-hearted, yeah. Like, let's look for something here when there so clearly is like very little here other than like, this guy's a leprechaun. whereas this is a movie with like a lot of ideas and like actual things to say and is presenting them in a way that, like you're saying, Becky, is difficult to watch, is like tough to consider and deal with. And like you're saying, Irene, like, is very fucking tragic and real. Like, yeah.
The movie that came before this one has a gay German cyborg man.
Oh my God.
And the leprechaun has a lightsaber. We weren't... None of us were ready for this movie to have, like, oppression and trauma. Like, And again... I don't want to get carried away giving, like, this director and the people at Trimark, who might have, been just trying to be, like, edgy. I don't want to give them too much credit, but, like, the movie that they ended up with, the movie that we are parsing 22 years later is, like, is really, really, really potent. And Irene, your read of it makes me appreciate, like, this movie... this franchise, in like a whole different way, and like being able to look Leprechaun 5 in the face and find this stuff is like, that's the exact kind of stuff that I love about this show and watching movies and like engaging with stuff seriously. And I'm so fucking grateful that you came onto this show. And that I've gotten to be your roommate for a really, really cool year. I'm going to miss you a lot. Yeah, thank you for being here.
I'm looking forward to it, buddy. I'll miss you too.
Thank you for being on here, Irene. You gave us, like, such great perspective. And me especially, I feel like you swayed me in a lot of ways and allowed me to, like, I think I processed my feelings about it from a different angle, you know. So yeah, we love you. Thank
I love
you
y'all
for
too anytime
here.
I mean that so hard. Give me a movie, I will watch it.
Yeah.
No, but thanks for having me on again, y'all. This was really fun.
Yeah, I
for sure.
So
yeah, let's get stupid for a second. Let's go to
yeah,
stupid town.
Yeah.
So Irene, last time you were on, what we did every movie was we gave our perspective rankings. And since that was always a task that was, like, uninformed by having seen the rest of them, and especially with Leprechaun, a series of 8 movies, we shifted our perspective a bit. And we just wanted to shout out some of the great user reviews out
Jesus
there.
Jesus Christ.
Nice. And sometimes I agree with the numerical system. Sometimes they say 8 out of 10. I'm like, hell yeah. This one, disagree with. 1 out of 10. Horrible. I don't think this way. But here's how Dawson108 thinks. And this one has a little PJ, something that PJ's really going to love.
Oh, God.
1 out of 10. Horrible. Where is the gore? Where is the violence? Where is the nudity? Perhaps I look something that is easy to find in Van Helsing, not the nudity. But
where's the
movie,
violence? But where's the gore?
Where is the gore? This is the goriest one of them so far, I'm pretty
sir,
sure.
Sir, with his hands from across the room, he exploded a man's stomach.
You can see poor makeup effects. The reason?
Yeah.
Low budget. You can see a weak story. For any reason a drag queen wants sex with a horrible leprechaun is impossible. This is the reason of this movie. Show the impossible as a truth. Be away of this movie.
Be away.
You could see this movie
be
only if you want movies with some good rap
movie.
Songs and nothing more. 1 of 10, but the worst moment is when you see Warwick Davies singing and dancing. Why don't you understand what Fred Olin Ray said? The best SFX are the naked woman's? I think that's what he's saying, is that that's the there best were no special naked effects women. Of
Oh.
That is the one criticism I have of this movie.
Tits are like,
the,
special like the one effect, like
usual gag they have of luring someone into death with a woman.
Yeah.
Kind of boobs.
With titties. There I think that in 2, 3, and 4 there are boobs, but
I will say the zombie fly girls, they're nothing to sneeze at.
No.
Okay. Absolutely not.
The girls are,
I would never
the
sneeze
girls are something else, but felt, you know, like you know, it's just hard to watch them.
It's really
by
it's
his
really
side.
Fucking creepy.
It felt really it's, bad.
Oh god, he ends this movie under the thrall of the I'm not going to deal with it right now. I'm not going to deal with it right now because I have a 10 out of 10 review to read for you.
Yes, give it to me.
By Ben Albert, 16472. Reviewed on December 22nd, 2018. 10 out of 10. It's Christmas time.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on.
Wait.
When? For
I
them?
Guess? That's Is the that title it? Of the review. No.
Oh, okay.
I thought that was like the review.
Oh, it's no. Christmas Hold time. On. Don't you worry your beautiful little self about it. I got it. Hold on. Don't worry. Leprechaun in the Hood? More like Krampus in the Hood. And guess what? The eggnog has gone sour. S-O-W-E-R. But you're all getting a hearty H-A-R-T-Y glass of Christmas. Share. Anyway, P.S. It wouldn't be a Krampus movie if he didn't bring along his evil Jack in the Box and gingerbread men. 0 out of 1 found this helpful.
Was he watching the wrong movie by accident?
Yes.
Or it's a genius at work and it's the funniest person of all time.
Yeah, this is some Brooklyn alt comic who's
just like for no one to read except for
yeah, he's
right.
somehow
us.
Making $7,500 a month on Patreon doing this.
Tim Robinson wrote that review.
It's Christmas time.
It's Christmas time.
For who?
You know what? I feel like I watched Leprechaun in the Hood on Amazon. And I'm almost positive that it had 4.5 stars. I can almost swear it.
Out of
I'll
how
have to look
many?
It up. Out of 5.
That's Just pretty that. Much my rating on it. I was the one who gave it that rating. That's why it looked that way.
It just has a 1 in the parentheses. Just PJ.
Yeah, I remember when PJ texted me when they were finished with the movie, and they just said, "It's Christmas time." It was weird because my phone made the Amber Alert sound when I got that text. Like, it exited out of everything else.
I think that's just your text alert sound for me. A warning of danger. Jesus Christ.
Oh my goodness. Well, I think we should probably call it there. Well, I hope you enjoyed whatever of my audio was salvageable, loyal Dead Horse audience.
Irene, before we go, do you have anything you want to plug?
I'm out here vibing, y'all. My Instagram is IrenePoke4. Come say hello. My hair changes every month. That's all I got.
Yes, support the vibing.
Support the
Thank you so, so much for being on this episode, Irene.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
We love you.
Have a and to Love Dawn, I say, Happy Mother's Day.
Happy Mother's Day, Dawn Daddy.
Fuck.
Good night.
Merry Christmas.
It's Christmas time.
It's Christmas time.
Dead Horse is Becky Granger, Dixon Cashwell, and PJ Audenzia. We'd like to thank Max Huffman for our podcast art, so go to maxhuffman.com and order his book, Cover Not Final. For exclusive content, follow us on Instagram at Dead Horse Podcast, and go ahead and give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and hit subscribe on there. It really does help.
I'm so fucking tired. Oh my god. Oh. We edit this show for free. I don't know. How about Morbius? Jared Leto, is that still funny? Is that still something? I don't know. Jesus Christ, good night.